This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Nanaimo artist Sarah Robichaud's latest collection is called Double Life. It's a series of large-scale acrylic paintings that explore the various roles in her life. The birth of her daughter, Amelie, set in motion what seems to be a creative meditation about life, from birth to death, and the roles of a mother, who also happens to be an artist, inhabits. Intensely personal and symbolic objects inform the wider work in Double Life, including the scales, surfaces, and colors Sarah uses. Sarah said about the collection, "Like the personal objects that I use as inspiration, the paintings themselves become reminders of certain phases in my life, reflecting what was happening and how I felt." Double Life encompasses the myriad of roles that I play as a wife, mother, and artist, and highlights the duality between mundane routines and internal tension to epiphany and exhilaration. The exhibition is currently displayed at Nanaimo Art Gallery's Vancouver Island University location until November 3rd, 2012.
I visited the exhibition of Double Life over the weekend and spoke with Sarah Robichaud. If you're listening at or near your computer, just Google People First Radio to find our webpage, and you'll be able to see some of the images we're talking about, along with a short video of the entire collection.
Sarah, Double Life is a series of large-scale acrylic paintings that are material in nature and linked to a personal narrative, what you describe as a personal narrative. Tell us about the creation of this series.
The work stems from my own personal experiences as a mother. I just had my first child a year and a half ago. So it comes from that, but more deeply, it's rooted in abstract expressionism. So anything that is related to my life, I think, comes out in the paintings. But I still want them to be open-ended enough that other people can look at them and feel like they see something, you know, a shape that reminds them of something other than what I see in the paintings.
Did the work on this series of paintings occur as a kind of a natural side effect of becoming a mother?
Yes. I mean, one of the paintings behind you was the first in the series. It's called Interference Violet. I did that one with my infant in a front carrier, and I do really meticulous things, like I'll use tape to tape a curve, and so I have to use so many pieces of tape to make a uniform curve shape. And so it was easy. She just slept a lot, and she would just be in that carrier, you know, as I worked away.
The phrase Double Life, and that's the title of this particular exhibit or this collection, it does not connote duplicity, though, as some people might think, in this work. Tell us what Double Life actually then refers to in a little more detail.
Well, it's related to what we were just speaking about becoming a parent and that double life that I live. I'm actually in my studio, which is below in the basement of my house, and so I can hear the little pitter-patter of feet, and I have someone who comes to take care of Amelie. And so I know what's going on, and yet I'm downstairs and I'm working, and I think once you become a parent, you're always balancing in your mind what are the needs of my child with the other things you need to get done that day, and, you know, in terms of forwarding your career. And I have this internal conflict at times between the two because I love her so much and I want her to have every need taken care of. But at the same time, if I'm not doing what I'm passionate about, I'm not modeling, you know, the kind of life that I think is fulfilling to her.
Sounds like you're talking about what I guess could be described as the essential challenge of parenthood, and that is being responsible for another life as well as your own.
Yeah, and it's universal. I mean, so I've taken that experience that we've, you know, a lot of people have had in having a child and raising a child, and then I just can't help it gets immersed into the paintings. So that's a starting point for the work, but then other things that have happened throughout when I was making these series, another major thing that happened in our life is that we lost a loved one, a family member. And so another jumping off point in the work had to do with that loss. And at the same time, I had found this bone on the beach and strung it up into my studio and put a spotlight on it. I just found it aesthetically really appealing to me. And yeah, I put the spotlight on it and it made this big shadow on the floor. And I work on paintings that are huge, so it's 6 by 9 feet. So it would cast this large shadow, and I used the shape of the bone as a beginning point in the paintings. They have a relationship with birth and death if you pare it down that far.
You've said that the paintings become a part of my life and are not separate from its most personal or pivotal moments and act to reflect emotional and physical memories. Tell us a little more about this notion of reflecting memories. You were talking about a found object, which was the bone, and how the shape then led to something that ended up being painted. How does that, and how do other things reflect emotional and physical memories in your work?
In this beginning piece, when Amelie was first born, I've also used lace. It's just things that are at hand, I guess, but that are also aesthetically or formally interesting to me that I'll grab to include in the paintings. And I feel like after I started to use the lace, I realized, oh, well, we just bought our house and I'm moving into this realm of domesticity and I'm having a baby. You know, before that we had renovated and I started to take fixtures that we had in my studio that were supposed to go in the house and I started to place them on the surface. So there's this integration that occurs with what's happening in my life and how it gets infused into the paintings.
Is that a typical experience for most artists, or is this something that is specifically related to your style or your particular manner of artistry?
I think all artists could explain how paintings, how their work relates with their own personal life. Not everyone wants that to be the content of their work. And I'm talking about that aspect right now, but really I'm hoping that these are more universal than that. That, you know, I had a friend who saw fractals in the work and in the patterning. The intention is that everyone brings themselves to the paintings.
You've written that the myriad of roles, and you commented on this a few minutes ago, that I play as a wife, mother, and artist highlights the duality between mundane routines and internal tension, I guess all the way to epiphany and exhilaration. Those are two words that you used that caught my attention. Tell us a bit about the concept and the experience of epiphany and also of exhilaration in this work.
I'll mention the mundane. I was talking earlier about repetitively putting pieces of tape on. I mean, it's really time-consuming, and you spend hours alone in the studio doing these things that to the naked eye don't seem very productive, or, you know, that a lot of people don't understand what value is the artist in this world. And so it feels like, whoa, I'm doing this stuff that's seemingly, like, where does it have its value? When will it be appreciated? But as you continue to work, it's all for a greater vision. And so it's time intensive. And then there are these moments where I do something really spectacular where it happens and I'm all alone in the studio. And I just feel this elation and thrill about something that's happened with the paint, something that I thought was a mistake that became, you know, the hottest part of the painting, the most engaging element.
This is People First Radio, only on CHLY 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca.
Sarah Robichaud completed her Master's of Fine Arts degree at the University of Victoria in 2009 after receiving a BFA from Queen's University in 1995. Sarah's artistic practice is rooted in abstract expressionism and involves process-based ways of working. Her paintings engage the viewer in a visual inquiry between the atmospheric and lyrical qualities of the form and the hard physicality of their material. Sarah Robichaud's collection, Double Life, is currently exhibited at Nanaimo Art Gallery's Vancouver Island University location. It runs until November 3rd, 2012.
I went over to the gallery on the weekend and met with Sarah. I asked her about the paintings and in particular the personal meanings attached to them. Now, Ashta, just a little earlier in the audio that we were playing during this particular broadcast, Sarah was speaking about the notion of experiencing epiphanies while engaged in creating art, just as we went to this break. We'll pick up on that conversation, and then Sarah will describe the pour, which is the pouring of paint during the exhibit's opening, and that piece now stands in the center of the exhibit space. You can find these images and a video from the exhibit online at our webpage. Just Google People First Radio to find it.
Here's the rest of that interview with Sarah.
Does the experience of epiphany then change you? Do you emerge after creating a series of paintings as a changed person? And if so, how?
I think I change and then I go back. You know, it's like I'm then back in the studio and I'm blocked and I don't know what I want to paint. And so it's a cyclical thing. And I think if I had thought that I've already painted my best work, then I wouldn't be motivated to continue. So there's always that inkling of curiosity and searching and trying to delve into the unknown. And then the exhilaration, part of why we're also standing next to this armature and the bone, mm-hmm. we have it hanging from the ceiling here in the gallery. I did a performance to relate the physicality of the painting process, because as you can imagine, these are 6 by 9 feet, and I work on a hard stretcher that's very heavy so that I can walk on it and scrape paint, and then I put them on lighter stretchers. Anyway, I wanted people to kind of relate to how much performance there is in the work that nobody sees, and so I did this pour. I actually poured 3 gallons of paint over the bone in specific colors that related to the colors that I used in the paintings.
Let's take a closer look at one of the paintings. You said that that particular painting was a first of the series. Is that correct? Is this then the last of the series,
no.
this one?
What's
this one called? What's it called?
It's called Pinky Honey.
Tell us about Pinky Honey.
The name is references back to my own childhood. And I guess at about age 4 or 5, I made everyone call me Pinky Honey or Quacky Green Girl, my 2 favorite colors, which have continued on. There's this romanticism, I guess, with now having had a child and thinking about childhood and that draw to pastel colors. There are some pastel colors in here, but there are also these forms that are very definite. And when we first walked in, you wanted to touch it. It's got lace.
Yes, and it's obviously a three-dimensional kind of thing, and I was drawn to it. I wanted to take my fingers across the smooth surface and then the textured surface.
Yeah, and I think a lot about those polarities or opposites in the work, like things that are shiny versus things that are matte, or this textured part versus the really slick areas. And then so the lace in this painting is not all over, it's just in 2 particular areas, so it feels more like an object, and then there's all this negative space around it, like nothingness, for the something to be more impactful. Yeah, so I mean, I see all sorts of things in here. I feel like there's these tether lines and fluorescent that connect the 3 areas, and then there's this cluster of shapes versus, you know, more paired back and linear formations. The curator thought this was a uterus sort of shape. I mean, you could see more phallic shapes. That looks kind of like a skull. But those are the things I see, and other people have said lots of other things that they see in the paintings.
What was happening in your life when you painted this particular, or put this particular piece together? Was there anything in particular happening with your daughter or your experience of motherhood?
I think I've touched on those things. It's just this ongoing balance between making sure she's happy and working. Yeah, I was just trying to work really hard to get this show done this summer. Yeah, I think it relates to both the birth and the death, though. This one is a conglomeration because it has that skull-like shape and also the lace.
The curator of this exhibit hopes that viewers of your art will, first of all, recognize and then be challenged to examine the correspondences in their own lives with the conceptual constructs, as the curator puts it, presented in Double Life. How would you suggest that your art be approached and experienced? We're standing in the room right now in which the exhibit is going to be housed until early November, November 3rd. How would you advise people to approach this work?
I think just come on in and with an open heart. And I mean, they're large, so they kind of just pull you in, and I think you have your own experience. There's all fancy language about art, and we kind of start to do it for each other, just like in any field, scientists, right, for scientists. And but that's one of my missions, is I want people to have a visceral response. I want them, you know, if you have had no art history experience in your life, I want you to be able to walk in and say, oh, I like it or I don't. I try to make them sexy in a way, like luscious and tactile.
What's next for you? Are you working on something else right now, or is this the kind of time when the field waits until the next planting, so to speak?
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of things to do after the work is made, applying to grants and applying to other shows. I would love it if this show could travel. But I do really enjoy working on the scale, and I already have two more stretched. So I'm going to continue with the series and add to it and hope to exhibit it in other public galleries, and that my gallery in Vancouver and my other two galleries will take a stab at selling them. Yeah, there's always, seems like now there's been this object of personal significance that just comes into my life and it ends up in the painting. So I'm not sure what that will be next, but I'm excited to see what I'm drawn to paint.
Sara Robichaud, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Nanaimo artist Sara Robichaud teaches and paints across Vancouver Island, British Columbia. Sara is represented in Vancouver at Trench Contemporary Art in Santa Monica, California, at the Ruth Bachnefer Gallery, and in Calgary at Access Contemporary Art. You can find her online at sararobichaud.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.